You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on the news that made headlines this week. And today our panel includes Kevin Richard, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Ed News, Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Audrey Dutton, senior investigative reporter with the Idaho Capital Sun. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
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 I was like, are y'all going to say something? No.
It's been a long week, Gemma.
Oh, my goodness.
I got nothing to say.
I know, exactly.
I'll come back in a few weeks.
Let's just go home. All right. Well, you know, we unfortunately need to talk about what happened yesterday, and this is the state enacting crisis standards of care. This was put in yesterday morning. Audrey, you actually spent a few hours this morning inside the ICU at St. Alphonsus. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, that was yesterday morning. I also just real quick want to say my daughter's listening, and I would like to just say hi, Ruthie.
Hi, Ruthie.
Hi, Ruthie.
Yeah, it was yesterday. So a couple of hours after crisis standards were announced, I went down to St. Al's, went into the ED, but we were invited in. Went into the ED, the COVID unit, and then the ICUs, and spent a few hours talking with healthcare workers, physicians and nurses, and kind of seeing what was going on. And it is exactly as everyone's been saying. They are doing their very best. They're trying to take care of everyone, and they're getting slammed. And it's a lot of COVID, and COVID patients are there for a long, long time. And it takes a lot of work to try and keep them alive and get them recovered.
And Kevin, given all of this and what has happened, we've had some lawmakers make statements, things like that. How tone deaf are some of them being right now, frankly?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was first of all, I was just struck by Audrey's story yesterday. If you're listening to this and you haven't read it yet, you need to read it. It really, if this story doesn't bring home to you what's going on in our hospitals and what our healthcare workers are facing, I don't know what will. So that said, you know, I was struck. I spent part of Wednesday afternoon listening to Dr. Ryan Cole, who was speaking on the invitation of Lieutenant Governor Janice McGee, and there were several legislators in the audience. It's like it's a different reality. It's a completely different narrative. It was my first chance really to listen to Dr. Cole, so I guess I'm kind of free riffing here and talking about kind of my impressions. I mean, there was a lot that he says that is just simply not it's just simply not factual. I mean, he spoke about how the vaccines are not effective against this current strain of the coronavirus, the Delta variant, that, you know, we're treating a 2021 version of the coronavirus with a vaccine that was, you know, engineered for the 2020 version, the Wuhan version, as he put it. That's simply not accurate. When you look at the numbers that the state has been putting out, not just the state, this is a national trend. You know, we are seeing this outbreak affecting unvaccinated people by huge, huge majorities. I mean, Audrey mentions that in her story Thursday, and we have been talking about those numbers over and over again. I mean, that is the state of this pandemic right now. It is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, which means that in my universe, it's a pandemic that is striking young people, students, you know, grade school students, middle school students, high school students in much larger numbers than we've seen in the past. That's the reality. Those are the numbers. That's what's happening right now.
And then, Kevin, I mean, in you know, so we hear from Dr. Cole, and then we have some lawmakers who try to reconvene the legislature to basically try and stop vaccine mandates in the middle of crisis standards of care, not because they were in effect. They've been in effect up in North Idaho. I mean, they are in effect all across the state right now.
Look, this is a Republican state. You have a Democratic president who is talking about vaccine mandates. You know that Republican politicians are going to try to out anti-Biden each other on this. They are going to, you know, they're going to lean into any kind of, you know, opposition to a vaccine mm-hmm. mandate, whether that is legislation, as the lawmakers were floating this week. They didn't have a quorum. They couldn't really advance any legislation. You have the governor wanting to pursue litigation. He wants to have the attorney general's office look at the possibility of a lawsuit. You have legislative leaders who are not there this week saying that they are outraged and incensed at the vaccine mandates, but they just didn't feel like this was the legislative vehicle to address it. You know, that's politics. That's politics in America. Mm-hmm. That's politics in Idaho. And we've seen that time and time again. We just haven't seen it with this kind of a healthcare calamity serving as a backdrop. That's what's different this time.
And we should know, when we talk about these vaccine mandates, there are people who say that, you know, if we did not have vaccine mandates, then we would not see the hospitals overflowing. And that is factually incorrect. There are, I believe, only 9 hospitals in Idaho that have a vaccine requirement, but every single hospital is struggling. In fact, in North Idaho, Kootenai Medical, the largest medical facility in North Idaho in Coeur d'Alene, does not have a vaccine mandate for its employees. So just wanting to make sure people understand that. With that said, we also know that there is this ripple effect, right? We're at least lucky enough to be living in an area with the largest 2 hospitals in the state, yet they are overwhelmed. Rural hospitals, smaller hospitals, people living in those smaller towns could be even more significantly impacted. And Don, you in fact talked with a doctor up in McCall. Is Don there? Oh, Don, hang up and
push.
Oh, there you are.
Mute button. It's a very, yeah, you know, I think my Joey get your iPad moment here. It is. So actually Boise Deb reporter Autumn Robertson actually talked to the emergency medicine doctor, Patty Kinney, up at St. Luke's McCall, and really got a good sense, I think, of what they are facing up there. McCall's hospital, the former McCall Memorial, is a critical access hospital, which means anybody who walks in the door from that entire Valley County region can be served. And what's tricky is, while they're doing relatively okay right now, they are seeing some challenges, they're impacted by what's happening at the larger health systems, because they often need to move folks out to those other facilities. And there was a really interesting bit of detail about oxygen, and they can only provide so much oxygen to patients. And you're having cases right now because of the respiratory nature of COVID, where patients are needing 60 or 70 or 80 liters of oxygen per minute. Whereas the McCall Hospital, really, once they get above 10, it's hard for them to keep up, which means they would have to take that patient and ship them out to a facility, most likely in Boise. But if those facilities don't have beds, it ripples back into the hospital in McCall. I think Autumn really did a really good job of covering an angle that I hadn't really been aware of yet. And you can see her story up on boisedev.com right now and read more about the situation there and how it's really impacting across our region.
Mm-hmm. I talked with Dr. Kinney for a story, he's just great to talk to. He also recounted a story about a patient that he had who needed to be put on a ventilator and needed to fly to Boise because he was so sick. It was 9 p.m. and he looks at the patient and he says, "I'm so sorry, you need to be intubated. So we need to send you to Boise, but there's not going to be a bed available until 2 a.m. And the man said, "Well, what happens at 2 a.m?" And Dr. Kinney said, I'm really sorry to say this. There's really only one reason a bed opens at 2 a.m. People don't get discharged typically at 2 a.m.
it's because they have died. And he said the man's, you know, he's wearing a mask. He's wearing an oxygen mask. He could only see his eyes, and his eyes looked terrified. So the man did get that transfer at 2 a.m. to Boise. The day that that we ran that story, I texted Dr. Kinney. I was like, hey, you know, thank you so much for talking with me and for sharing the story. Here's a link to it. And he says, oh, I have an update on that patient. They did get their bed at 2 a.m., but they too died, making room for the next patient. And that is what's going on.
Right. I mean, that is what is going on. And we need more people to understand that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with our reporter roundtable next. Continuing our Friday reporter roundtable, our panel today, Don Day with BoiseDev.com, Audrey Dutton with the Idaho Capital Sun, and Kevin Richer with Idaho Ed News. So Kevin, in the middle of all of this, with crisis standards of care now being implemented across the entire state, schools are in session, some masks optional in some districts, some not. The largest school district in the state, West Ada, late last week actually changed course. And I believe you spoke with the superintendent.
Yes, I did. I had a chance to talk to Derek Bubb, the new superintendent in the West Ada district, earlier this week for a podcast that we just published earlier this morning. So it came out a couple hours ago. And obviously what I wanted to ask him about was his decision, because it really was his decision. The trustees gave the superintendent the latitude to do whatever he thought was needed. Last week, he reinstituted a mandatory mask requirement for 40,000 students, for staff, for visitors. It's a two-week requirement, which means that, you know, this time next week, we're going to be watching to see what the superintendent does with it when we know, you know, where the numbers are right now, and where we have a pretty good idea where the numbers are headed. We're not going to be out of this surge next week. So I really wanted to ask him, well, how are you going to approach this? And I think he is definitely looking at it not just as an issue of trying to keep kids from getting sick, or, you know, keeping kids in school, which is obviously a big part of his calculus, but I think he's very mindful of what's going on in the hospitals. We did the interview on Tuesday, so it was 2 days before the crisis standards of care designation for this part of the state. But he was definitely mindful of what's going on, and definitely mindful of the fact that a school district with 40,000 students is a big part of what happens with community health. So we dig into it, and we get to talk about some other issues that are facing West Ada. That podcast is available right now.
Mm-hmm. So Kevin, I mean, I think that a lot of people appreciated what the superintendent said when he did talk about basically being a partner in public health. But I mean, he's still gotten pushback for reversing course and mandating masks.
Well, this has become just such a controversial issue, and it's playing out in so many different ways in so many different parts of the state. I mean, when I talked to Superintendent Bubb about it, and I talked about the opt-outs, you know, we've run those numbers so many times that you had 13,000 students or thereabouts were covered under the opt-out forms that parents turned in. He said that it wasn't quite as black and white as that some parents turned in the opt-out form so that their kids could have an option in school, but that they still expected them to wear masks. That it wasn't as absolute as those numbers may make it sound. But you're right. This has become such a political, you know, it's become just this political gridlock. And I wrote about that some this week. And our Devin Bodkin, our Eastern Idaho reporter, has been covering, you know, the ongoing saga in Victor, little town in Eastern Idaho, where the principal is now going against the wishes of the superintendent and saying, I want masks mandatory in my school. So she's issued that order effective next week. Victor Elementary, which, by the way, closed earlier this week due to a number of illnesses, not all COVID-related. But, you know, this is the saga, and it's playing out, you know, in different ways in 115 school districts and 70-some charter schools across the state. It's a fiasco.
Yeah. And private schools have had their issues too, Kevin. So, sure.
Yeah, I mean,
there it's been everywhere. Yeah.
Right. I mean, no school is immune to it. And that's kind of what Superintendent Bob said. You know, this isn't a West Ada issue. It's a national issue. It's a global issue.
Mm-hmm. And then, Kevin, we have higher ed. In particular, Boise State University. And I must say, I drove by the stadium last Friday evening and kind of gave me heart palpitations to see so many people packed together. I realize it's outside. It's open air. But they also, you know, school administration had sent notice out about a rise in cases. So what do we know in regards to higher ed?
Well, the Boise State situation is definitely ongoing. I mean, you saw what I think everybody saw last Friday. I watched the game on TV and, you know, there were very few fans in the stands with masks. And Boise State has now kind of acknowledged that and said that, you know, they're disappointed. And now they're going to incentivize and give, you know, give swag to, you know, people who show up for tomorrow's game wearing masks. You know, it's, you know, and this all comes a couple of weeks after President Trump and other university administrators sent a pretty stern warning to the university community saying, look, these case numbers are troubling and they jeopardize in-person instruction. They jeopardize campus events. But here we are. We had 35,000 fans last week. We'll probably have about as many tomorrow. And, you know, we really don't know what that's going to mean in terms of cases on campus. I looked at the numbers today for Boise State. They had 90 new cases this week. That's down from where it had been a couple of weeks ago. Still pretty high, but the numbers are starting to creep downward a little bit. Anyway, we'll see what it looks like next week and the following week when we've had a couple of games you know, played out.
And Audrey, one thing that we're also seeing around the country, but also right here in Idaho, and this is just so, I mean, there's just so much sadness around what's going on. But we're seeing more and more pregnant women hospitalized with COVID-19.
Yes. There have been dozens in the past month in just the two largest health systems in the state, St. Luke's and St. Al's. Yesterday when I was touring the ICUs, I asked about that and, you know, what are some of the outcomes you've seen? One pregnant woman had delivered, but the baby was no longer alive. Mm. I mean, these are women who, when you're pregnant, your immune system is lowered to protect the baby. And you have like kind of less lung capacity because you've got a baby in your belly.
A lot less lung capacity as the pregnancy goes on. I mean, in all seriousness, you truly do. It can be difficult to breathe that last trimester of pregnancy.
Yeah. And your inflammation is a thing. Like your whole body's just got more fluid in it. So, because you're trying, I mean, you have more blood in your body, literally more blood to keep the baby.
You're literally trying alive. You're growing a human. Right. You're growing a person.
So it was surprising early in the pandemic when we were getting reports that it was like not such a big deal for pregnant women to get COVID. That was really surprising to me. And it turns out, well, now we know that's not really true. On the other hand, there's been a lot of misinformation spread about the vaccine and its effect on fertility, its effect on breastfeeding, various other things. It has no negative effect on anything related to having a baby. Doesn't have any effect on miscarriage rates. What it can do, though, which is really pretty cool, is when mom has antibodies to something, they can give passive immunity to the baby.
Yeah.
And so there is actually a potential benefit. I don't know that they've confirmed that that happens with the COVID vaccine created antibodies, but it happens with other vaccinations and it certainly happens with just antibodies that a person has in their body. So unfortunately, dozens of women have gotten so sick with COVID that they've ended up in the hospital, and typically not with great outcomes. So that is definitely something that healthcare providers are really concerned about, and they're having to have horrible conversations with these women's families.
Mm. Yeah, I can't imagine. I do want to switch things up a bit, because there is other news going on. And yes, it is not as serious as the crisis standards of care and what's going on with COVID. At the same time, I do think we need to sometimes lighten things a little bit when we can.
Yes, so, yes, please.
Yes, I know. Seriously. So, Don, we're bringing you in, because there was there was a really big announcement about Topgolf. And I mean, this is actually a really big thing for the Treasure Valley.
Yeah. So really, it was kind of a ceremonial announcement on news that we first told you about 2.5 years ago. And then
yes, the
spring confirmed with filings with the city of Meridian. And I start talking on the radio and my dogs start taking off. So I apologize.
Of course. Joey's at school, though. Don't worry about it.
That's okay. Well, my dogs don't do iPads. So so yeah, so what's going to happen at Eagle View Landing, which is at the corner of I-84 and Eagle Road in Meridian, is a Topgolf facility. And if you're like, what's Topgolf? What? Tell me this. It's essentially it looks like the Stickle Sky Center dropped in front of a huge driving range. And so there's all these little booths. They're open air, and they've got TVs and food service, and you can tee off from there and try and hit targets and participate in all these different games. I haven't tried it, but seemingly everybody of mine has. And so I'm pretty excited to try this out myself. But they broke ground on Wednesday, and we'll start construction here soon. It's one of a number of different new pieces that's coming out there to that site. It's the old farmstead location. Yeah. Where you used to go and wander around in a corn maze. So soon you'll be able to go and play high-tech golf.
I have to say, I've never played. I've never been inside a Topgolf, but I'm with you, Don. Everybody who I know who's done it is like shocked that I haven't done this yet. I haven't had this experience.
It seems fun. I mean, I like to go to a driving range on occasion, and I took a bunch of golf lessons a few years ago, and I've played like 3 rounds since then because I'm terrible. But I don't think this is really necessarily about being skilled. It's about having some fun with friends, and so it looks like a good time.
And you know what? We need that, I tell you. Yes. We need to take a quick break. We will be back with our reporter roundtable next. Continuing our reporter roundtable with Audrey Dutton with the Idaho Capital Sun, Don Day with BoiseDev.com, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. Audrey, I know earlier you talked a little bit about some of the one-on-one conversations you had with frontline medical workers. I'm curious about what any of the medical workers at St. Alphonsus said to you this morning after the crisis standards of care were implemented and you are walking in the ICU. Was there anything in particular that struck you?
Well, I don't think any of them were surprised. And it is a statewide activation. So they at St. Alphonsus yesterday, at the time I was there, were not operating in a crisis level. They were still at contingency, which means they are using all of their resources creatively and are still able to give people good care. It's just a really big juggling act. I think one of the things that really stuck out to me, and this is a problem, this has been a problem since before the pandemic, but it's really a problem now, is the disinformation. You know, people who are ending up in these COVID units and the ICUs have been relying on bad information when they make their decisions. They're bringing to Dr. Carolyn McFarlane, who's a hospital physician taking care of COVID patients. She, you know, she talked about having to argue with patients sometimes who are saying, why won't you give me this protocol or this treatment? And she has to have a conversation with them, and it takes time. And the reason, she said, is that it's not based in any kind of evidence. Like she would gladly welcome ivermectin into her practice if there were sufficient studies to show that it's effective on COVID and that the benefits outweigh the risks of using it. And that's been key for the emergency use authorizations. Like, does the benefit outweigh the risk? And so it is also kind of, I mean, I don't know how many people cried while we were in there or teared up or obviously we're kind of fighting away tears. Like they're just exhausted. And I've talked with healthcare workers since the start of the pandemic who are feeling that way. A lot of them have just left. They cannot do it anymore. And a lot of them left before we had vaccines, and the vaccines, you know, patients showing up who are unvaccinated, which is almost all of them. It seems like it's kind of like a punch in the gut for these healthcare workers, to be asked to use unauthorized, non-evidence-based treatments to try and fix a problem that could have been prevented in the first place.
Yeah.
They just don't get it. And that's been a kind of thread that's run through this, all of the conversations I've had lately with people.
And switching gears, Kevin, really kind of a interesting charter school opening for teen parents.
Yeah, this is an interesting development in a story that we've been following for years. You know, longtime Boise residents, well, you don't have to be a longtime resident, will remember the Booth Pritchett School that used to reside in kind of the near North End. I think it was near 27th Street or thereabouts. Well, it moved a couple of years ago out by the Salvation Army campus on Emerald Street. And now it's changed in terms of who's running it. It's a charter school now serving the same group of students. It's serving, teen parents. It opened its doors as a charter just this week. Sammy Edge has a really nice story about that first day. About 50 students right now. They feel like they probably need to be at 100 students to be fully financially self-sustaining, but they do have donor support and Salvation Army support to keep going for the next couple of years anyway. Now it's a really interesting chapter because this is a school that, we've written about for years, Boise residents have known about for years. I was able to go to a graduation ceremony for the Pritchett School, the last one as the Pritchett School from the 27th Street campus. And it was really kind of a really fun event. It was really a moving event to see these students graduate and celebrate. It's, a very cool event. And the program is now going forward under different management, different governance, and we'll watch and see how it works.
And Don, we've all seen all the growth in the entire Treasure Valley, in particular in downtown Boise, and there aren't a lot of empty lots left. And soon there could possibly be one less. And I'm talking about the parking lot across the street from the Owyhee Plaza, the Owyhee building. I still think of it as a hotel.
Yeah, and it's actually immediately behind the hotel.
Okay.
And so it's along Grove Street at 11th. And so the Owyhee Plaza is one of downtown Boise's oldest hotels. It opened in 1911. And about 10 years ago, they converted it from a hotel to primarily some residential units. A new owner picked it up 2 years ago, and now that owner hopes to convert the empty parking lot into an 8-story boutique hotel that would have 124 rooms. It would have one restaurant and two bars. And what's interesting is the first bar would be on the ground floor and would be bigger than the restaurant. And then there'd be another bar on the roof of the building. So it's Kevin's kind of place. And sorry, Kevin. I haven't given you crap in a long time. So I
fair enough.
So this is going to be a pretty interesting addition to this part of Boise if it gets built. The Capital City Development Corporation plans to spend millions of dollars to upgrade Grove Street here in the next few years. And this project would help take advantage of that. We've got a whole bunch of hotels on the drawing board in Boise, which has been honestly the story of since I started Boise Dev 5 years ago. I feel like I write about a lot of hotels downtown. But even just right now in the works, we have this project on the adjacent corner. So right across the street is a plan for two more hotels. The old Bouquet building on Main Street, we've been reporting for the last few years about a plan to convert, well, not really convert that, but sort of bring it back to its former use as a hotel, which stopped in the 1960s, and restore it to its historic state. And so it's really interesting. When you talk to Pat Rice of the Greater Boise Auditorium District, who tracks these things, he said, you know what, we've continued to see a lot of demand. That demand really started to swing up this summer during the pandemic. Obviously, there's some chop in the water, I think, right now. But the long-term prognosis for people coming to Boise and staying has been really good.
It's just fascinating to think of the amount of hotels already in downtown Boise because, you know, I mean, Don, you were born and raised here.
Everywhere.
But I mean, for those of us, you know, who've been here for a really long time, I mean, there was like the Grove Hotel. I mean, that was it. That was all there
was. Yeah, I mean, I remember when it was like the Red Lion Downtowner and the Red Lion Riverside. And that was kind of
those were the days.
The dueling Red Lions.
I know.
The dueling Red Lions, right? Yeah.
Right.
As far as hotels downtown, I mean, the Grove Hotel, you mentioned it, opened in the late 1990s. And that was a big deal because it was like, oh my gosh, we're going to get a fancy hotel in downtown. And now it feels like every block has a fancy hotel. You've got just in the boutique space, you have Hotel 43, the Inn at 500 Capital. You have this new project by the Owyhee, which I should mention they're calling Hotel Renegade.
I think that's hilarious. And
it is. And so you've just got all these things. And some people will say, well, why do we need more hotels? And hey, you know what?
Why
people
not?
Don't like any different kind of project. There's somebody's going to have something against it. But it shows that we're vibrant in a tourism space.
There you go. Hey, guys, thank you so much. Wow, what a rough week. We've been speaking with our reporter roundtable, Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Ed News, Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Audrey Dotton, senior investigative reporter with the Idaho Capital Sun. Thanks, guys. Hope you're going to have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye. And I want to thank all of you for joining us as well. We so appreciate you. We appreciate you listening and participating. We appreciate you also contributing to Boise State Public Radio. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. Tess Goodwin is our production assistant. Our theme music was written and produced by Boise musician Will Hall. Our executive producers are Paul Stribling and Tom Michael. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Have a good weekend. We'll see you back here next week.